governor's husband trying to order a boat in up north, and what happened?
I really don't think he did anything unusual. He was trying to, per the information and the intelligence that I've received, he just tried to get an appointment for their boat to be put in, and he was just asking a simple question. I really don't want to drag the governor's family into this mess. However, it is a bit of a hypocrisy for her to make on May 18th to say, you know, she's talking about all of us now, should think long and hard about going up north because we don't want to expose them to things. And then for her to proceed to go do that and ostensibly have a graduation party for the family. So to me, it was probably a little bit of a mistake of her husband. But to me, I don't think that's a big deal. I just think it's a big deal that, you know, she asked us to do one thing, but then she does another thing. So it's an indication of really just a tone deafness and not understanding what leadership is like.
Well, was it open or not?
Was what open?
Up north.
Well, the restaurants could open at partial capacity, and some businesses were open. Motels were not open. She was advising people to not travel up north unless they, you know, and she actually used the words, think long and hard about leaving your homes and going up north. So
right.
You answer the question, Greg.
I do, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people went up north over the weekend.
Of course they did.
Yeah.
Of course they did. But that's not the most important thing for us to talk about today. We've got some serious budget challenges ahead of us. We've got schools trying to figure out what they're going to do this fall. We've asked the governor to provide us a proposal to adjust the current budget because we've got such a couple billion dollar negative revenue hit. We've still not received any guidance from her, and so we're going to have to proceed on our own. And I've maintained that because of decisions that the state has made, specifically our governor, that that schools should not be hit in this budget year. I'm talking about the current budget year.
Right.
Next budget year, there's probably going to be a negative effect because of the reduction in revenue, but we've got CARES Act money, federal money that's sitting idle, not being deployed, and it is our intention in the legislature to accelerate that and get it to the people who need it. And in this case, in one of the cases, I believe we should deploy it to schools and hold them harmless for these kinds of decisions that have occurred since I think March 23rd or in that neighborhood. Let them finish up the school year without having a big prorated negative adjustment on their budgets, and then let them start planning for next year, which will probably have some adjustment in it because of revenue shortfalls.
Well, it could be a pretty significant one, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's estimated to be in the neighborhood of $1 to $1.2 billion just in school aid fund, and that's not a small amount of money as a percentage of the entire budget. Plus, they're going to have to accommodate changes in their structure and in the business models. And right now, until we provide some assurances to schools on how the student count is going to be accomplished, and why is that important? It's because I think parents will still be skeptical come fall. And so there's going to be probably some inconsistencies of how many kids show up and when they show up. And it's just going to be a real challenge to navigate this next school year. And thankfully, we've got a cadre of school leaders here in Jackson County that are pretty creative. And, I know they're already working on details to make sure that they're making schools as safe as possible.
Yeah, and it's going to be... I guess each district to themselves, right?
That's exactly right. I don't want to get back into this mode of one size fits all dictation that comes from the state government. Each one knows what their unique needs are. Each one has their own communications set up with parents to help navigate, you know, and give them calm assurance that it's okay. And each one needs to own that themselves, and I'm confident that they will.
What other areas of the budget will be constrained, Mike?
I think that the biggest individual budget in our overall budget is the Department of Health and Human Services, and that is a huge budget, and it's the place where we're going to have to find squeeze out some of the reductions to accommodate the reductions in revenue, and it'll probably be on a percentage basis, it'll probably be the department that's hit the hardest. So those are medical services and healthcare services and mental health services and things like that that nobody is disputing the need, but we have this little thing in our Constitution called requires us to have a balanced budget. We can't borrow money to make the budget work, and we certainly can't print money like the federal government can. So it's going to be a real challenge. And every day that we wait for a proposal from the executive office, it's actually causing the hole to get deeper. I've instructed our appropriations to chair and all the subcommittee chairs to prepare budgets in the range of 10, 20, and 30% reductions, and we're standing ready to do so. Everybody's got that work done, but it requires the engagement of the executive office, and I believe they're waiting. Unfortunately, I think ill-advised. They're thinking that there's going to be another tranche of federal money coming in, and I, based on my conversations with our congressional delegation in Michigan, I'm not sure that's going to happen. And so it's a dangerous waiting game right now, and we need our governor to engage and start making these adjustments. Otherwise, it's going to get really ugly really fast.
What about a second wave of this virus, if that ever hit?
Well, I frankly think that's mischaracterized. This virus is going to be around for a long time now, and we need to transition from being in fear of it to learning to coexist or live with it. And I think people have now identified ways in which they can do so, being situationally aware of your surroundings and where you're at. Employers, businesses are re-engineering their workplaces rapidly to provide as safe as possible work environments. And I think people are changing their habits to be able to accommodate it. We don't get the real data that suggests that 99% or 98.7% of people survive it fine. And the fact of the matter is there's a high percentage of people, way over the majority, that have contracted it and didn't have any symptoms. And data will suggest in 2020, perfect 2020 hindsight, it will prove, I think, that we've probably overreacted on this. That doesn't diminish the deaths that occurred, for heaven's sakes. We know we've got some serious problems with some of the policies that occurred with regards to nursing homes, and we're digging into that. But we need to learn to move from fear of it to learning to live with it, and that's what I believe is the right approach right now.
Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey with us this morning. A little late, but better late than never. Mike, appreciate it.
Greg, I think next week I'll try to come into the station so we can avoid some of this confusion.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, buddy.
Appreciate
Take care.